Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Faith Church Podcast. I'm your host, Jay Williams, and joining me today is Jeff Clossy.
Hey, Jay. Good morning, man.
How are we doing?
Hey, well. Really well.
We're back.
We are. Yeah, dusting off the cobwebs.
Yeah.
We've
been inundated. In fact, we've been contacted by several of the major news outlets of like, hey, when's the podcast coming back?
And we just say no comment.
We say no comment. Yeah. I've said soon. I've said that, you know, the plans are in the work, that we have not made the decision to end it. I think some people wondered, you know, did we just stop doing it? It's amazing. Like, it's funny with rhythms, right? You get out of the habit of something, and anybody knows this about anything. Like, if you know, work out or do anything, when you're in a rhythm of it, it's no big deal. Mm-hmm. But when it's, when you break it for a little while, starting it again feels like a giant mountain.
Yeah, there's a little bit of like momentum gathering, right? You're trying to build it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, we're excited to be doing this though. We love it. The podcast has not run its course.
No.
We don't think that. We just, summer rhythms, different.
Summer rhythms. I was gone, and then you and Christoph, I guess, just decided you didn't care about the general public or our listeners. So
yeah, that's exactly what happened.
You had a meeting.
I'm so glad that you said it that way.
We couldn't come back without me saying something like that. Like it's,
I think we did one, but yeah, we aren't without, well, I don't know what I was going to say there. Never mind. It's not going to be helpful. Let's just keep going.
Why
did you have to say that? Now my mind is trying to respond to that.
I love that you're asking why. why do I say any of the things that I say? Why do I have
and
to?
And now everyone who asked, where's the podcast, Ben, is feeling a sense of regret.
Why did they say
now? Because they're experiencing this part of the podcast.
If they don't know how uncomfortable the first part of our podcast are by now, then like that's why we only have 5 listeners.
Yeah.
They're the only ones who are able to either. The only people who stick with our podcast are the ones who know how to use their skip button.
Well, they this
fast
is what
forward
I do.
30 seconds.
This is what I. There's one news one that I listen to, and there's like commercials for the first minute, and the robot. I'm not going to say the name so I don't trigger anyone's phone. I've learned how to tell the robot to go forward a minute and a half, and then I skip all of that. So I'm sure there are people that do that with this.
And those are the only people.
Skip 10 minutes.
Like I know how tech savvy you are based on whether you listen to our podcast or not. Because if you listen to our podcast, that means you're tech savvy because you know how to skip. But I was thinking about rhythms and how, you know, we've talked about that before with preaching. So this does tie into this past Sunday. So preaching is one of those things where when you're in a regular rhythm of preaching every week, prep is not, doesn't take as long. And I've always been mindful of like when you or Christoph or, you know, Robbie or others have preached, I know that I can't just dump that on you the way that it could be dumped on me because I'm in rhythm. Because I've also served in contexts when I'm not the regular preacher. And then when you get asked to preach, it's like it just takes longer because you're not in those rhythms. And so that's why it was even doubly amazing that this past Sunday, knowing that you are not in those, that's not your regular rhythm. And then to find out Sunday morning at 3 or mm-hmm. whatever it was that you read my text, mm-hmm. my final one. So if people are wondering, like, I am okay. Like there's some mystery going on around me or whatever, but, I have never, it was so weird for me because in my however many years of ministry, it's now more than I like to count.
Like 20, 3 or 4?
Yeah.
Oh.
25, some odd, whatever years. I have never called in sick when I was to be preaching. And so it was a really surreal thing for me to just like face the reality of I don't know. And so then it was like this cross up. So people wonder like behind the scenes, what happens in that situation is I feel like I got to make a call. Like you and I talked about this yesterday, that I can't be like at 5:30 saying like, I don't know, maybe. And then at 6:15, like, I don't know, I feel a little better. I think I could do it. The reality is I think I could have, like, I think ultimately by 9 or 9:30, like, I feel like I could get up there and share something, you know, or share what I had prepared, but I had to at some point, like, and so at 2, when things were still not good, I just thought, I gotta pull the plug on this and just make sure Jeff, whenever you were going to wake up, that you could look at it and have an answer. And your answer was, you're on, which is really incredible for a couple of reasons. One of the things I want to do is talk about, like, you know, so what was that like? So I do think it'd be helpful, mm-hmm. Because in our culture, it's so, we think of sermons, and pastors think of sermons as like these, we put in tons of preparation. But the reality is that most of the preparation that the pastor should have in their preaching is a continual being immersed in God's word and in prayer, right? Like one of the things that's amazing to me is when I look back at old timey pastors, you know, 1800s, 1700s, 1600s, and you look at how many sermons they would preach a week. A lot of times they would preach Sunday morning, Sunday night, and Wednesday night. And so three sermons a week without any help from technology, without any, no, like the most they've got is a concordance, maybe, like that nothing, they don't have Logos Bible software, they don't have Google, they don't have copy and paste of verses into their thing, like they got nothing. And they're writing three, like how is that possible? And the only way it's possible is that 90% of their prep is already done by the time they get to the passage. They're only getting at the last 10 yards where they're like, okay, how does this speak to our congregation today in this moment? That's the part that they're actually putting, you know, their effort into, and by and large. And that's what it felt like on Sunday for you. Like I knew you'd go to your wheelhouse of like, you know, when we poke you, what comes out. And I knew it was going to be on discipleship. And I knew it was going to be about like some kind of apprenticeship or discipleship, which is awesome. So I'm curious, like just from your point of view, what was that like? Mm. What was Sunday morning like for you? Mm.
That's a good question. I have to say, you know, when I got the text from you, my thought process was, my first response wasn't, oh, thank God, which I wish it would have been. Like, it wasn't like, wait,
thank God Jay's
I'm in
sick.
This position. Yeah. Oh. It was not. It was like,
yeah, I wouldn't think so.
Okay, Lord, now what? I really felt that. And you know, Jess, and I know this is the same for Lauren, our wives are always so with us in this. They aren't up there preaching with us, but they are so in it. And I just looked to Jess and said, okay. And she was, what can I do to help? She was just an amazing support and ally. But I just started praying, Lord, what have you put on my heart? And at first, my first thought was, man, I'm reading in 1 Samuel right now. How can I quickly write something up in 1 Samuel? And I just thought, no, I can't do that. I can't do
throw
that
a quick
quickly.
One. Yeah,
it's not going to happen. And then it just was like very clear, very quickly, where this needed to go. And I was thinking about your sermon a couple weeks ago in the worship in the park about following Jesus. And then, yeah, you're right. I mean, that's what I think about. And I think about being apprenticed to Jesus because it has been the most joyful, life-giving, also involving suffering thing that I've ever experienced in my life. And I want everyone to know what that is and what it would look like to begin that process or to continue it. So I knew this passage well, but I had never actually done with it what we did on Sunday. I'd never preached it like that. It's usually this Great Commission is used as a call to make disciples, which it is. But I was seeing that in that moment, actually, it's also a description and all these examples of what it means to be a disciple and all the things that disciples do. But then I also felt there's this passage in Corinthians where Paul says he was with them in fear and in much trembling. And I literally had that experience. There were moments of like, okay, Lord, I'm trusting you. I'm going to get up in front of them. And I think you're going to give me some words, but it also might not happen. I might stand up there and not have anything to say. I literally had that thought. And Jess was very helpful. She's like, of course you're going to have something to say. I'm like, I know, but I feel like I might not, which is different. And that's really, I mean, I know you would say this, when we are prepping a message and then delivering a sermon, it is an act of faith. That's what we want it to be, an act of faith and trust. And sometimes preparation can lessen the sense you feel that needs to be happening. Because I'm like, I'm ready to do this. Let's do it. But this was a moment of feeling I am 100% dependent upon what His Spirit is going to do in me and what His Spirit will do in the people hearing this, to hear something valuable. And by God's grace, He was faithful in doing that.
Yeah, not only was He faithful. So I think you just hit on a couple of things that I don't know. I mean, we definitely, you gave plenty to talk about that we could process, but I just was thinking in terms of preaching and how does what happened on Sunday help us understand better the ministry of the word? Hmm. You know, we just get into these rhythms of like, oh, there's a sermon, and so this is what a sermon's like. And you see it in our culture where people feel like we can just kind of have a smorgasbord of like, oh, I'm going to go and I'm going to listen to this preacher and this, you know, and I, you know, I kind of mix it up. We've talked about before where we've said it's normal in our culture that you're not even a part of a church. Like you could just, you know, pick different preachers that you like, as if that's actually, you know, preaching. And we've talked before about how preaching is God communicating through a person to a particular people in a particular place and mm-hmm. time. Mm-hmm. And it's not that that can't have value in other places and time that other people might hear at another point, but the main thing is those people in that time. And you know, you talking about relying on the Spirit, like I just had some observations because you had mentioned, and I also had gotten feedback, several people had told me how impactful it was. And you'd mentioned that how you got more positive feedback mm-hmm. from this one. And so there's a thought, and they're like, well, yeah, see, so we should never prep until Sunday yeah. morning. And some people take it to that. And yeah. I don't think that's the lesson to learn from it at mm-hmm. all. But I do wonder, like, okay, well, why was it so impactful? And so there, I had some thoughts. And one of them is what you just said there, is your dependency on the Spirit was very obvious, not only to you, but to everyone. Hmm. Everyone is in a place of that. Either one of us on any given Sunday can say in our intro of like, man, I labored in prayer over this. Like mm-hmm. I was really trying to be dependent on the Spirit or whatever, but people are still going to hear that through the lens of, well, yeah, you've also worked on it all week.
Yeah. Yep.
But when you know, like in that moment, everybody knows you're just trusting the Spirit to try to do something helpful. Mm-hmm. And so that I thought about that, and in line with that also that it tells you that the posture of the hearer matters. So this would be one practical thing that I would say. This is a lesson for all of us from this, like God's gift of this from this past Sunday, is one of the reasons why I think people were impacted at that level is because their posture towards it was one of anticipation of joining you in prayer. So when you get up there and you say, I did not find out that I was doing this until this morning, mm-hmm. everyone immediately sympathizes with you. Everyone immediately is on your side. Not that they're like antagonistic on a normal Sunday, but I would argue that people are often neutral. I would argue that most of the time when a preacher gets up to preach, the congregation, most of the congregation is kind of sitting there waiting and saying, all right, do something for me. But in that moment, they joined you in the ministry of the word. Like they are not only listening, it changes how they listen. They give a lot more grace in that moment. Like if you had stumbled or said something that was like, oh, I'm not sure, people would have thought, well, I mean, you didn't have a chance to really prep that. But they're also in that moment, I'm sure that there were a lot of people who are praying mm-hmm. actively while you are preaching, mm-hmm. which means that they're listening to the Spirit more, which means now there's a communication there that's happening as you're sharing things and they're praying for you. I think they're probably understanding and hearing things with a different heart and a different understanding. And so it's just such a great lesson of imagine if that's the way it was every Sunday. Now, I'm not saying like there's probably people listening. They're like, I pray every Sunday for the preacher. Great. That's awesome. You know, do that. But my guess is this past Sunday, it was all the more. Mm-hmm. And it just makes me wonder, like, what would it look like if every Sunday, whoever was preaching, that we all were like saw it as a communal, kind of like what we do with worship. Worship, we understand that worship time with music is not about the person leading the song. It's not a performance. And most people know that. Our church does a really good job of living that out because of how loudly people sing, and I love that. And so there's a participation. It reminds me of, I don't remember when it was, but remember when Jason, one of our worship leaders, for people who don't, if you're listening to it and you're not a part of our church, but one of our worship leaders started playing and forgot how the song went, like got the wrong rhythm and was totally out of sorts and kind of stopped. And then the congregation started singing the song. And then he was like, oh, and he jumped in. And like, that was one of the most beautiful moments of worship I think I've ever been a part of. Imagine if we had that, like that, that's the parallel that I see. You know, imagine if somebody got up there and had to lead worship and they were like, I literally just, you know, I just found out I was doing this 5 minutes ago and I don't even know if I know these songs. The congregation would jump in and would be like, this is how that song goes. Like, we're here, we'll just sing it and we'll sing it a cappella if we need to. That same heart is available in the time of the word. That is not like when we turn off our participation and just now it's like, okay, now it's Jeff's time or now it's Jay's time. And now I'm an observer. Like, no, you're participating even then in how you hear, how you're praying, how you're receiving, all of those things.
Yeah. It's like an orientation or a focus on God is here. God is working and we're with him in that, you know? So the words of encouragement right before I got up for people who happened to say to me that morning, so how are you? And I quickly said, well, been a different morning. And I, you know, didn't have time to explain, but people that had a sense that, okay, this is not planned. The words of, I believe the words of God from them to me as I was preparing to preach were amazing. And that was like, we were all participants in what he was doing in that moment. And I think that that sense is what he's really means for all of life to be. I think that's why worship together is so important, because we get to practice it together in those moments. And I think that's where we're all headed. Like, that's where he is taking us, is that really our whole existence will be those moments where we're just very attuned. Like, I am his voice right now to this person. He is using, I'm his body, literally in this moment. And together we form that body. But yeah, I think you're right. I think that there was just a mutual sense of dependence upon God. Just acutely aware.
Yeah, it's acute awareness.
Yeah.
Right? Like, we know in our head.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes into then, we talk about like, come to worship prepared to worship.
Mm-hmm.
How often do we show up on Sunday morning either in a neutral state or worse? You know, how often do you show up in a chaotic way? You know, because running out the door late and worried about all these other things, you know, or at best kind of in a neutral state. But what does it look like to actually prepare our hearts to worship, understanding that this is a communal thing? Like, imagine the person who's playing keys on a weekend shows up and they hadn't practiced at all and they weren't ready, you know, and, you know, or a vocalist, like, you know, has a frog in their throat and hasn't drank any tea, isn't ready, hasn't been up for a while, like rolled out of bed. And they're like, oh, you know, we would think, oh man, you didn't really prepare. It would have been helpful for everybody if you had come ready. But all of us have that place in communal worship. And I don't mean to say that as like, I don't want that to be a heavy yoke or a burden, or like, it's certainly not a guilt trip. You know, God obviously knows that when people show up late and they feel like sheepish about that, I'm thinking, you have no idea. I showed up late too. The only difference is my time that I'm supposed to be here is much earlier than everyone else. But I get it. I get that feeling. But we do need to be reminded that it is important,
mm-hmm.
you know, how we show up and when we show up. Another thing that I thought was interesting, I'd love to get your thoughts on this, is it to me drove home the idea that preaching, you know, the evangelical church, we get this picture of preaching that it's supposed to basically be a Bible lesson. And that's not preaching. Preaching is a call and response. It is a proclamation of the kingdom of God and a call to respond to it. And yes, we often teach the Bible in the midst of that, you know, to explain what God is saying in certain places, or to explain what's going on and how hearers would have heard it, and all the different things that we do when we exegete a passage. But preaching at its core is a proclamation of the kingdom that has come through the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus Christ and our response. And I think when one of the things that happened is you didn't have time to come up with creative ways to teach much.
No.
You literally were proclaiming and then calling for people to respond. And that's the power of preaching. That's 95% of preaching. And you're able to do that. All the other things that we do, like illustrations or word studies or whatever, are all meant to serve the proclamation and the call to respond. So I don't know if that like hits home with you or you're thinking about that, because that's what I saw in you, because you are a teacher. So the only thing that was different, if I would have not known, and I just listened to your message, I would have thought like, that was a great message. Hmm. But if I knew you really well, but didn't know the situation, I would think that's different for Jeff.
Mm-hmm.
Because you are a teacher.
Yep.
You explain things. You use really good illustrations, really well thought out illustrations. And you didn't have those on Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a little behind the scenes. So before worship started, the worship service started, I went to Donna and I said, Donna, I know that you have a certain amount of content planned for Faith Kids, and I just need to alert you that you might not have time to get through all of it, because I'm anticipating, I actually don't know how long this is going to be. It might be 15 or 20 minutes. I really didn't know. And I think it was probably like 30 or 40. I don't know.
It's 40.
Yeah.
41.
Yeah. So surprised me too. So anyone who felt misled when at the beginning and I said, this might be shorter.
Did you feel some sympathy for me? Do you realize, like, cause that's what I do every Sunday. I'm like, I don't know. Like,
I just didn't. And yeah. And I think I made a little joke towards the end when I was bringing home the, what do you do with this? Of like, I do like to be able to have really thought through. And when I think through application, by the way, I'm thinking of specific people that I'm talking to that week as a pastor, and what would this look like for them? And I want to be that help, you know, like I don't believe I'm the Holy Spirit in that moment, but I want to alert people to the areas, you know, that this could apply to. And I just couldn't do that. I just didn't, I think all I said was, what is the next step of faithfulness? Like, what is the next thing that you trust him for this right in front of you? Do that. And that was all I had in that moment. I didn't have time to come up with something, you know, more detailed or illustrative, but I think, like you said, he can use that call and he can fill in the blanks that I couldn't fill in that moment in a person's life. Cause he knows us, he knows each one of us and what we need. And I mean, that's part of the joy of being a disciple of Jesus, is being known by him. It's knowing him, but also being known by him and realizing that, like, he knows me that well, he knows what I need. And he knew even that morning, that's what I needed, you know?
Yeah, and think about the call. So you mentioned worship in the park, and I talked about the call of Jesus. He doesn't give a big theology lesson to explain to them what he means when he says, I'm going to make you fishers of men. He doesn't unpack all that. It is a call and a response. It's essentially like in that moment, Jesus is saying, come follow me. And the only thing going through your mind is, who is this?
Mm-hmm.
Is this somebody that I should be setting down my nets and following or not? And so remembering that is every week, that's the call. It's a call and a response. It is not about filling our heads with more knowledge, theological knowledge or biblical knowledge. Biblical and theological knowledge is meant to serve our understanding and love of Jesus and helps us clarify, like, what does it look like to follow him? But it is not in and of itself the pursuit. And I love that when those simple, and I felt like, by the way, worship in the park was similar, even though I knew I was preaching, I was also coming back from vacation and I actually had very limited time. And it's interesting that sermon for me was one that I got a lot of positive feedback. And you and I both would look at what you preached on Sunday and what I preached at worship in the park, and we would both say, there's nothing theologically profound or biblical, like nothing in either of those sermons where somebody would go, wow, what an incredible insight into that scripture. And you really like took this very complex situation and spelled it out and helped people. It's good to be able to do that. Like, don't get me wrong, but it demonstrates that the power in preaching is bringing people into the presence of God and letting them hear from the Holy Spirit and then responding, calling them to mm-hmm. respond. And the reality is we've all had to face this, that sometimes a lot of, at least I can speak for myself, sometimes a lot of what I share in a message is actually distracting from the goal rather than helping it. So think about application. You just mentioned that. Mm-hmm. You didn't have the time to think about, like, you know, what would Jay need to hear in Jay's mm-hmm. situation or in Christoph's situation? Or this happened to me several weeks ago where I thought, man, there's general application, practical application, and then specific application. General application is just like, how did people in the Bible apply this? How, like, really big picture of, like, well, this is how they kind of applied it. Like, you know, it's more general or biblical application. Like, how did the early church, how did they live this out? Practical application is when we do what you were just talking about. Like, so, okay, if you're a teacher, how does this impact you as a teacher? Or if you're working in a factory, you hear us say these things a lot. That's practical application. If you're staying at home, what does this look like with your next door neighbor? That's practical application. Specific application is what the Holy Spirit is saying to Jay mm-hmm. in that moment. Mm-hmm. So, like, for example, loving your enemies and praying for those who persecute you. We could talk about biblical and general application, and we could point to how Paul handled being imprisoned, how Jesus says, Father, forgive them, they know not what they do. Like, that's biblical kind of general application that we see. Then we could talk about practical application of, like, hey, maybe you've had a falling out with somebody, or maybe you've had division from this political season, or maybe. And what I've noticed is sometimes those distract from the specific application that the Spirit may be speaking to that person in that moment. Because I can give you a general, or I can give you a practical application and try to put myself in your shoes, but the Holy Spirit may actually be saying, no, this person. They may put a specific he may put a specific person on your heart that you're supposed to forgive. And sometimes the practical application can give us a distraction to be like, man, I'm not going to think about that person. I'm going to pick the easiest application. Or for some people, they're wired to pick the hardest application. Mm-hmm. But whatever it is, it's not specific. And so in that, you were able to give biblical application of what does this look like for the disciples, but you didn't have time to think through practical illustrations and examples of it. You kind of went straight to, okay, well, I just gave you the biblical application. You should listen to the Spirit. Mm-hmm. What is he telling you is next? And like encouraging people to fall into that. And so it's just interesting to me how sometimes all of our work and prep can actually be a distraction from the main stuff that mm-hmm. that God's actually calling people to.
Yeah, I mean, it's evidence that God is really alive. He's really speaking to people. He's really working in our hearts and even preparing. You know, it's interesting to me, and I think I said this, but that, like, how God wasn't surprised by the circumstance, and which means, by the way, that because we know who God is, because he is so loving, he always wants what's good for us, and he's always working towards that. That means he had been preparing each person for that as well. And you know what I mean? And so we're all in that, this sphere of just God's generosity and goodness towards us. And that's every week. It really is. I just, like you said, I think it was just more in that moment of, wow, this isn't what we expected. And no one expected I would stand up and say that even at the beginning, like, this wasn't the plan. This wasn't at least our plan at the beginning. Right. I made me really thankful to be a pastor in this church with the people of this church, like, very tangibly. And it's a blessing and it's a gift to get to do that, to get to serve Jesus as I serve the people here. And it made me thankful for that. It really did. And
yeah, me too.
Thanks.
I felt like, well, that was about our congregation, not so much about you. But I was like,
well,
I was thinking, because I shared this with you, and I told Lauren before she left, the only thing that caused me anxiety about the whole situation was I feel this heavy weight, and like I so desperately want people who are new to feel welcome,
mm-hmm.
and to feel connected with. And so my only anxiety was attached to, are we going to be so spread so thin? But I still trusted our congregation,
mm-hmm.
and there were some really incredible stories from Sunday, you know, that where new people were really cared for, and that made me feel so much at peace. But one thing I did not worry about was I did not worry about what you were going to say. I had full confidence in you, and I didn't worry about our congregation. I knew I had full confidence that they were going to be ministered to because I knew they would respond this way. And I even told you of like, just let them know what's going on and they're going to be with you.
Mm-hmm.
And they're with you anyway.
Yeah.
If you hadn't said anything, they would have been with you. But in that moment, I agree with you. We do not have a congregation that is expecting to be entertained every Sunday. Mm-hmm. We don't have a congregation who is, like saying, okay, prove yourself to me. Like I expect a certain, they come to worship. And like, I felt really freed in that. I felt really encouraged. And it was funny because you and I are starting to read, you'd asked if I would read The Contemplative Pastor by Eugene Peterson, with you, which is a great invitation to do that. And so I was reading that Sunday morning, you know, after I'd, you know, spending time with God. And I was reading that and I just happened to be in the section where essentially he's like, you know, churches get along just fine without pastors. It turns out, I mean, I'm paraphrasing, mm-hmm. but he's basically like, the congregation's fine without you. And I was like, this is timely. Mm-hmm. And I've always like known that, one, because I just feel like I'm not very good at this. So I'm like, well, sure, of course they're good. They're fine without me. But still that feeling of knowing that we have so many people in our congregation. Like one, they're so participatory, mm-hmm. right? They're so friendly and welcoming. And so I knew new people would get connected with. I knew that they would be ministered to. I knew it'd be an incredible morning. And so I was so confident in that. So yeah, I'm just echoing what you said, just how thankful I felt that I didn't feel like the whole thing was going to come crashing down because I didn't deliver the sermon I'd prepped.
And I think to me, it also highlights like why our shared life in Christ is so important. You know, to the extent to which our Sunday morning gathering is a culmination of a life we're living together in ways that we're able to, right? Like not that we're always together with each other. We can't, right? We have different callings and jobs and families. But I do think the more that Sunday morning, few hours together in worship, whether it, you know, before and after, plus the time together is a culmination of those relationships and of what God has been doing throughout the week, the more that we will all feel that. In those moments, we really are linking arms together. I mean, even the worship on Sunday morning, like every Sunday, the voices were so loud and the sense of we are right now, we are adoring God together. We are loving him and enjoying him. It was so, to me, just really palpable. And even the songs that God led Jason as he was picking the songs for worship, they fit so well with a sermon that hadn't been planned. I mean, it's just wild to me how that all happened. And
it is wild. Like, do people realize that? I know you mentioned that, or Jason mentioned that or something, but you had a rough idea of what I was thinking I was going to talk about because you and I had talked a couple of these, but Jason had zero idea.
Yep.
He had texted me and asked, hey, do you have any direction? And this was like on Monday or Tuesday, and I was like, nope. And because we're just kind of in this transition time right now before we start a series here in a couple weeks. But like, he didn't have a clue what I was thinking. And then not only that, but then there's a curveball even at the end, and you took things in a totally different direction and did what you did, and he happened to be mm-hmm. choosing songs that were right in line with that.
Yeah,
and
it was beautiful.
It's almost as if God knew what was going to happen and was orchestrating everything together.
Yeah. Yeah, God is reigning. He's active and he's involved in our lives. And Yeah, I mean, it makes me excited about the fall, the coming yeah. weeks that we have together, and what he's going to do in youth ministry and children's ministry and in all the things that are currently. I mentioned in the announcements, you know, that we're in a season where things are relaunching, right, and getting going again, yeah. and it just makes me excited to see what he will be doing in all those areas.
Yeah, I think the last thing that I was thinking about, and I'm curious, so the and in a sense, I guess I could have reorganized these as saying the blessings of having a moment. Like, what did we learn from that? Why was it so impactful? And one of the last thing that came to my mind was that often we miss the most obvious things about our faith.
Yep.
And we can get distracted by new knowledge, you know, new insights, when we don't realize, well, I don't know that we really have the basic ones down, you know, or like you never fully understand. And you and I both got comments about discipleship and like not thinking like it, different parts of that sinking in.
Yes.
You know, for some people, it's just even the thought of, oh, I'm a disciple of Jesus. We so often think of discipleship, especially in the American church, it's so often communicated as knowledge about the faith. Like, you're just growing in information, and that happens from human being to human being. But do we realize, like, I'm an actual disciple of Jesus? Mm-hmm. The disciple, it's not this pyramid scheme where, like, okay, only the original disciples were disciples of Jesus. And then Timothy, you know, is a disciple of Paul, and, you know, somebody else is a disciple of Peter. And, you know, Paul actually pushes back against that in 1 Corinthians. He's like, what in the world? You don't belong to Apollos or Paul, you belong to Christ. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we think of in those terms, and I'm not saying it's wrong to think of, you know, discipling others or people being a disciple of another human being. But ultimately, we are disciples of Jesus. We are first generation followers, one, you know, like a direct connection, followers of Jesus.
Yes. I think that is such an important point, because it's a totally different posture. Even if you're trying to help someone grow as a disciple, or you're seeking help from someone, both people involved in that relationship are disciples of Jesus.
Yes.
And I think when we get that wrong, like here's the person that I'm this person's disciple,
right?
Like this other human who's in front of me. The reason we do that often is we think, well, they have knowledge I don't have, or they have experiences, and those are things that we need to share with each other. But what we need more than anything in the world is to know Jesus, and to the extent that their knowledge and experience leads us into a deeper knowledge and experience of Jesus, then it's really helpful. But if it's just like them, that's not what I need.
Right.
I need the things that Jesus has done in them and through them. I don't know if I'm saying that clearly, but having been involved in discipling and discipleship relationships for so long, I can't tell you what a difference that makes when all involved see themselves as his disciples. So when I help someone, I'm his disciple helping someone be his disciple. It's never about my name. It's never about my maturity or, you know, whatever it is, my expertise. And most people don't intend for that to be the case, but it unfortunately can become that, where you have mature people and immature people, and the mature people help the immature people, like that. That's not it. I mean, we are all in desperate need of his grace and growth in his likeness, every single human. There's no one who's not. And to the extent, I mean, I shared that quote from Jerry Bridges, by the way, about that every day we need his grace, on our best day we need his grace, and on our worst day we need his grace. And I had experiences of getting to have lunch with him, which was really fun, a couple different times. And the first time I asked him, he was like 84, 83, something like that. And Jerry, just tell me, what's the main lesson that you would want me to hear if this is the only time I ever interact with you? And it was Jeff, you need I need the gospel every single day of my life, and I will always need the gospel of Jesus and his grace. There's not a moment of my life where I don't need that. No matter how much I grow, no matter how much I change, I need him. And He meant it. And this is a man who'd been following Jesus for decades, you know, written extensively about that. And that's the truth. The more you grow in Christ's likeness, the more you realize you need him. It's not that you grow and now I'm independent of him. It's the opposite of that.
And that's maturity. And mm-hmm. I think man, what an important lesson for us to learn right now in the church.
Yeah.
That if you're in our culture, people can kind of put themselves forward as the expert, and they sound like they know what they're talking about, and they, you know, even share a lot of biblical truth. But if their demeanor is they have arrived, or they are the expert, and that they are now disseminating information to you, they are not actually following Jesus. They may want to. I'm not questioning their salvation or questioning, but I'm just saying they're not actually following Jesus in that. And I know you've had this experience. You just said that with Jerry, and I've had this with other people, that the older saints mm-hmm. that have the biggest impact always, 100% of the time, have a posture that they are constantly dependent on God's grace and are learning new things every day.
Mm-hmm.
And they learn from the people. And over the years, as a young pastor, I would meet with different pastors, and there's such a difference between when I would meet with an older pastor who would come to it as basically like, I'm the expert and I can tell you how things work, versus the one who would, it seemed like his mindset was he was learning as much from me as I was learning from him, even though that wasn't the case. Like, I'd be looking at it going, holy cow, But the posture of humility, the posture of exactly what you said, that in their mind, you and I are both sitting together at the feet of Jesus.
Yes.
And I may have been following Jesus longer, so I can help you maybe understand some of the things that he just said. That like, oh, the rabbi said this, like this is typically what that means. You can imagine that happening with his disciples, you know, when they're actually following Jesus, you know, physically, the ones who'd been with him the longest could kind of turn around to somebody that just joined and was kind of like following around, being like, wait, what are we doing? Like, hey, this kind of happens. Sometimes we just kind of get up and we start walking and, you know, whatever the case is. And so in that way, those who are more mature and have been following Jesus for longer can help the younger in the faith. That is meant to happen, but it is way more from the posture of, we are both sitting at the feet of Jesus. We are both walking along this path following Jesus. And I may have some insights because I've been doing this for a while of how to help you understand that. But then you're also going to have, like, you know, fresh eyes teaches us something.
Mm-hmm.
You and I both have had the experience, man, when you sit down with someone who has just come to Christ and they see for the first time, it is so encouraging to my faith. It reminds me. Sounds like a rabbit trail. It's not. Trust me. I can go right.
I trust you, Jay.
I remember when we first came here, when I was on sabbatical, you know, now it's been 10 years ago that we came through this area for the first time. And Lauren and I were struck by the beauty of this area, the rivers and the trees and the farm landscapes, the bright red barns on the grassy hilltop, you know, or whatever. And having lived in the West for so long, seeing that much green and that much, you know, the rivers, and it is so beautiful. And we were just remarked to people of this is, we said driving into this area was like maybe one of the most beautiful places we had ever seen. And so many people were like, what? Like, that's just trees. You know, you don't see it. And so here were people who knew this area. They knew this area way better. They could tell me, you know, where you should get ice cream and, you know, what roads were in good shape or where you go for whatever. Like, they knew this area way better because I was brand new to the area. But something I was able to give was, this is really beautiful. And there were people who, you know, would say, like, look at the area differently because here was this naive newbie that's going like, look at that river. That's incredible. And so in the same way, that's one of the ways that we do. We both sit at the feet of Jesus. And if you're younger in the faith, you do have insights and you do have things that people who are older in the faith benefit from, because sometimes it's a reminder of the faith that like you had. And sometimes it's some kind of understanding that is like has escaped me in all my years or whatever. But yeah, you're so right. Like, just, that was, you know, a rambling way of saying that as you look for people that you want to imitate as they follow Christ, I cannot stress enough, they should have a posture that they are constantly learning. They should not have the posture of a rabbi, because they're not, Jesus is our rabbi. They should not have the posture of they have arrived, or that they have all the answers, or that, you know, they should have a posture of that they are learning, that they are in awe of Jesus, that they are growing. That's the person that you want to follow, not, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which is totally different than it's the upside down nature of what it means to follow Jesus from the way things typically are in the world. The experts are the ones that know everything. And in his economy, Jesus's economy, the experts are the ones that know he knows everything, not them.
And don't we know that by looking at the world?
Yes.
Like, I know you love it when I bring up COVID, but remember when, like, the thing that would drive me crazy through that whole thing was, like, where's some humility, right? Just tell us, like, hey, we're not really sure how this is transmitted. Like, maybe it's on surfaces, so let's try disinfecting surfaces. And then when you realize it's not that, to come out and say, turns out we were wrong. You know, like, I so much more trust a medical professional that's like, hey, we don't know 100%, but our educated guess is this. Like, I do have some experience in the medical field. I do have some experience with, like, these kinds of diseases. And so I do have an educated point of view that might help in this, but I'm not perfect. And we always understand, we appreciate that. But man, we still do crave, mm-hmm. like, what we crave is that somebody knows everything. Mm-hmm. And so we'll keep putting people on that pedestal, and we'll keep assuming it. And sometimes it will be a negative to us when somebody says, yeah, I don't know. And so we kind of have to take ownership of that. And it happens in the church when, you know, like, we're just drawn to people who sound really confident. And when you look at Paul's writings, isn't it amazing how many times he does not instill confidence? He's like, I chose to know nothing among you but Christ crucified. I came before you with fear and trembling. Yep. I didn't come to you with lofty words of wisdom. Like, basically, everybody else is a better speaker to me. Like, I'm foolish. I'm coming to you with foolishness. You know, you guys already, you have everything you want. You guys are rich. We're poor. Like, he's never letting their confidence be in him.
No.
It's always pointing to Jesus. And so at its core, if you want to imitate someone, if you want to find someone that can help you grow in the faith, find people who are not going to put your confidence in them, but in Jesus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. And if you're hearing this too, and you have a new desire or a continued desire to follow Jesus as a disciple, and you want help with that, and you don't know who to talk to, I would recommend, first of all, just talk to the people you know at Faith right now and begin exploring that together. But if you need help, let us know. You can fill out a card, obviously, on a Sunday. We always say that, but we're serious. You can fill out a card, say, I need help following Jesus as a disciple, or you can just call the office or send us an email. We would love to help you get started and to connect you with other people who are doing that. Because, like I said, it is personal, discipleship is, but it's not individual. It's not individualistic. It happens in community. And we just cannot grow as Jesus intends for us to grow unless we are doing that with other people who are also growing. So I would encourage you, if you did hear God calling you into that or into some newness in that, act on it. Follow his lead on that and see where he might take you as you respond in faithfulness to him.
I love that you said that on Sunday, and I just loved it, where you ask the person that brought you, mm-hmm. ask the person sitting near you. And if that person says, I don't know how you should do that, then find another person. It would be funny, like, if you did that and you find, like, three or four people who are all saying, I don't know. And then eventually you find somebody who is like, well, hey, let's read the Bible together. Now you got a group of five or six who are,
yes,
you know, going to go on that
group.
Yeah. Isn't that amazing to think about that? And I love the idea of that. So on the flip side, if you are a person who gets that question asked of you of, hey, can you help me understand this whole following Jesus thing? I mean, number one, if you're sitting there thinking, like, I would not even know where to begin, well, that's something we should be able to help you with, right? So don't, rather than just saying, well, go talk to Pastor Jeff, I would encourage you to say, let's go talk to Pastor Jeff. Mm-hmm. Maybe we can get some direction, and maybe this is God's moment with you where he's calling you into something deeper. You know, it's a very common experience for people that for new parents that when they have kids, they start to be more curious and learning about their faith. And it's very common that we'll have people who will say, my kids are asking me questions I don't know the answers to. And that's a catalyst, right? But it doesn't have to be your child. It can be the person you brought to church with you. It can be the person who you didn't even know before this morning, and they just happened to be sitting in front of you, and now they turned around and said, are you a follower of Jesus? Can you help me understand what he just said? And that may be the moment where you feel that weight of, oh, is God's calling me into something deeper. So don't just pass, it's not a world. We don't live in an economy where you need to have the pastor come and visit you to do that. But we are here to equip you and to help you. And so if someone asks you a question and you need help, like, we want to help you help them.
Yes.
As we all follow Jesus.
That's part of God's, you know, blessing for you in that moment is figuring that out with him.
And it's awesome. It's an adventure. Like you said, and I love that. It was like the first point that you made of, like, mm-hmm. It's an adventure. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine something more exciting and terrifying than Jesus saying, follow me? And you're sitting there going, am I going to give up my life right now? Am I going to lay down my nets? That had to be so exhilarating and terrifying and confusing and mysterious and amazing all at once. And they all stuck with him. Mm-hmm. Like the original 12 or whatever, they all, well, except for Judas, obviously.
Yeah.
But I mean, and even Judas bailed at the very end, right? Like it's so fascinating how they followed him and they kept going, and they learned more and more. And then you definitely can make the argument of all of them that they didn't fully understand anything probably ever, but they understand so much more after the resurrection.
Yes.
And all of a sudden things made sense. But that didn't deter them. And so, yeah, we are called to do that. And like you said, we're called to do that together. So we want to encourage you. Yeah. Fill out a communication card, email us at connect@faithpastogo.com, and just know we are all in this together. So hopefully this has been helpful. Really thankful for this past Sunday to be back in the rhythm of podcasts, and what a great week to get back into the rhythm of podcasts than what happened this weekend. And so we're grateful for you taking the time to listen. Hopefully it's been encouraging. Until next time, grace and peace.